Hello, everyone, and welcome to the ACTIS Podcast, a bi-weekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI and sharing the latest news that's going to be relevant to you in the CDI profession, as well as ACTIS as an association. I'm Carla Kozak, Editorial Manager of Products and Events at ACTIS, and I'll also be your host for today's show. Our topic today is engaging providers in a remote environment, and I'm pleased to be joined by Kelly Rice, MSHI, BSN, RN, CCDS, CDIP, CCS, CRC. Kelly's a clinical documentation education specialist with HCPRO and ACTIS. She serves as a full-time instructor for HCPRO Bootcamps and Propel CDI services, and also as a subject matter expert for ACTIS. She has a diverse clinical background in trauma, surgical ICU, PACU, and occupational health. She holds a Master of Science in Health Informatics Studies with a focus in data analytics from the University of New England. She also has a Bachelor of Science in Nursing from Oakland University. She previously worked as a travel RN, is licensed in the state of Maine, and has been licensed in the states of Michigan, California, Washington, Colorado, and Oregon. Rice currently serves on the ACTIS Resource Library Committee. Also, a quick reminder that the ACTIS podcast offers 0.5 ACTIS CEU for the first 4 days after posting, which can be used towards your CCDS or CCDSO recertification requirements. I'll be sharing the instructions for claiming your CEU at the end of the show, so do stay tuned for that. But before we jump into our topic with Kelly, a brief word about today's sponsor.
HCPRO's groundbreaking Provider Education Micro-Learning Series is designed to deliver essential CDI coding and revenue cycle training to providers in a focused yet digestible format. The Provider Education Micro-Learning Series includes 30-plus quick-hit modules for both inpatient and outpatient providers detailing documentation tips for clinical conditions including heart failure, sepsis, and acute renal failure. Authored by Lori Prescott, RN, MSN, CCDS, CCDSO, CDIP, CRC, and James Manns, MD, FAAOS, CCDSO, from the Mayo Clinic, the modules explain how provider documentation influences and quantifies publicly available physician profiles related to mortality and complication rates, affects organizational quality metrics, and ties into risk adjustment methodologies and reimbursement. Modules on key conditions highlight the patient diagnoses and conditions with the greatest impact and the ones that can be challenging for providers to capture the needed specification. Providers may take recommended learning tracks based on their setting or specialty, or take curated collections that have been customized to build the education they need. Providers can breeze through the engaging, dynamic, quick-hit modules, hearing embedded physician-to-physician audio snippets, backed with advice and real-world guidance throughout. Plus, providers can test their knowledge and take evaluations throughout, allowing them to earn Category 1 CMEs through completing each module. And there are helpful downloadable tip sheets included that provide valuable takeaways to reinforce learning and offer a quick reference. This e-learning series from HCPRO explains CDI processes and teaches providers documentation best practices, helping to reduce the volume of queries they receive, along with bolstering their understanding of compliance to ensure they protect themselves and their organizations. Learn more by using the link in today's show notes. And now, back to the show.
Thank you again for joining me today, Kelly. I really appreciate it, and I'm so excited to have you here to discuss this really important topic about engaging with providers in a remote environment. So to sort of set the stage, I just want to talk a little bit about before you came to HCPRO. I know you were out there in the trenches as a practicing CDI professional. Were you remote or were you hybrid? And what was that like? If you were previously fully on-site at any time, what was that transition like? Like, just give us a little bit of a background of your experience with working remote.
Yeah. Thanks, Carla. I'm really happy to be here with you again today as well. So I started working out at an organization that was fully on site that promoted much of the day working at the nurse's station to try to make ourselves as available to answer questions and ensure queries were completed. We moved to a hybrid model less than a year later that piloted allowing us to work from home 2 days a week. There was some concern that our response rates and the provider engagement would decrease after implementing this change, but it actually wasn't the case. We were still encouraged to perform our reviews on the nursing floors and interact with the providers as much as possible in the days we were on site, but we found that providers were often too busy to interact with us on the nursing units. It really wasn't the most optimal time for them to receive education. They really needed to focus on patient care, and we were kind of viewed as a distraction or a nuisance. So working on the units definitely did impact our productivity rates. We couldn't copy and paste. It was often hard to concentrate with all the conversations and noises at the desk. Really slowed us down. And the provider would tell us that they actually preferred that we would communicate and engage with them at a time that was more convenient for them or that was actually designated or carved out specifically for education. When I transitioned to working as a consultant and then at a large healthcare organization that was fully remote, I found it was actually easier to engage providers remotely. They really appreciated being able to communicate asynchronously and respond when it was convenient for them. They weren't getting physically intercepted on the floors of the units while they were busy trying to focus on patient care. And most of the CDIs actually report that working remotely allows them to be more productive and focused. And the use of applications like Teams or Zooms that have video capability helped us to feel more connected to our team. There was still that sense of camaraderie despite not working in the same physical space as our peers. But for many of us, I think that the transition went really well. We did have to learn how to use some of these new tools and technology, especially if we were now delivering education remotely. And some people struggled with technology and may have found that really frustrating at first. But I think overall, it was a really welcomed change for most people in the profession. And the pandemic actually pushed a lot of organizations into a hybrid or remote work model. I sort of doubt that the workforce would have transitioned as quickly as it did if it wasn't out of necessity for social distancing. There was a lot of apprehension, particularly from leadership at first, about how we were going to continue to keep our providers engaged if we weren't on site. And many programs had planned to resume this on-site or hybrid model once the restrictions were lifted. A few have, but many programs continued to work remote because they found that they could work just as effectively and never reverted to those pre-pandemic site requirements.
Now, there's so much to unpack here. First, I love the idea of what you said when you started in CDI, being out at the nurse's station, being visible, being accessible. But I can also totally see how that could be perceived almost as like in the way or in the middle of the chaos and not the best environment to be performing your duties. So while visibility and accessibility are important, it's that tough sort of balance. So I think it's really interesting that you brought that up.
Yeah, exactly. I always felt like I was in the way.
Yeah.
Valuable space at the nurse's station.
And I also think it's really interesting that you talked about some of the challenges of shifting to a remote environment because of the pandemic and how some people struggled with technology and adapting and maintaining that sense of camaraderie. What do you think are some of the benefits, though, to working in that either remote or hybrid environment as a CDI professional?
I think that most CDI specialists report a much higher job satisfaction working in a remote environment, which often allows us a better work-life balance. You have more control over your environment. I personally am always cold, so I am cranking heat up in my home office. I can work in my PJs. I don't have to listen to conversations in the office that can be distracting. I save time and money from not having to commute. And another added benefit that I don't think a lot of CDI specialists really realize until they started doing it is they feel like they're given some more trust and autonomy with their job. They're treated like professionals. They don't need to be constantly physically supervised. They can get their job done in their home environment.
And I think in recent years, both the value and importance of work-life balance and also the feeling you get from being trusted like that, like you said, from being trusted to get your work done and manage your own time is just so important for employee satisfaction. So I think, yeah, that's a really great point that you bring up.
Yeah, that's a big change for people that are used to working in a clinical environment to go from that to working at home and to know that you can get your job done and you can manage your time effectively. Like, that was a big shift. I would say that working a hybrid environment does have some benefits, especially for team building. It's really nice to be able to just pop over to your coworker's workspace and get their opinion on a query. When you're working on site, there's more opportunities for like team huddles and meetings. When you do work in that fully remote environment, we do run that risk of things being misunderstood or misconstrued when we're communicating in writing. And then there's things that we lose, like we're going to lose the ability to see people's body language. Some CDI specialists do say they prefer educating in person. Some providers say that they prefer that as well. That face-to-face interaction can help to establish and build a trusting relationship. Some of us really enjoyed working and participating in interdisciplinary rounds with the physicians. We obviously lose that if we're working from home. It makes it more challenging to collaborate with other disciplines like the wound care nurse, social worker, the dietitian. So it's a lot easier to do those things when you're occasionally on site. So there are some benefits.
Absolutely. All great things to consider. And it's nice in a hybrid environment. Like you said, you get kind of the best of both worlds. You get the independence of working remotely, but also you have those few days where you're able to be together and to collaborate. Now, you mentioned some of the challenges about being remote in addition to the benefits. So I want to specifically ask about the challenges you faced when you were trying to reach providers when you were remote, whether that was trying to engage them or get them to respond to a query, any sort of interaction with providers. What challenges did you face and how did you overcome these challenges?
Yeah, great questions. So some of the challenges we encounter is because we have so many different communication channels that we can utilize. And we all have different preferences. Some providers might prefer secure chat, while others might prefer an email. They might find that less disruptive. Some prefer that you pick up the phone and call them. If we're working in a different time zone, that also creates additional challenges. We might need to align our work hours so that we're available to providers when they can reach out to us with questions. Or we can get a hold of them if we need to get our queries answered. I do think that most education can be effectively delivered in a remote environment as long as we have the proper tools in place. So as an educator, I always find it super helpful to be able to read the room. And obviously, you can't do that if you don't have access to a webcam. If you can't see the room, you can't read the room. Sometimes their mic might not be working, and it can make it really difficult to interact with them and allow them to ask questions if you don't have the proper tools in place. And then anytime we're working remotely, there's always a chance that we're going to experience major technical issues that can impede our ability to even deliver the education. We might have issues connecting to the organization's VPN or the Wi-Fi. Maybe our electricity goes out. Those situations are rare, but I always think it's good to have a contingency plan in the event that these things do happen. It's a good practice to maybe assign a backup person to be available in the event that something like that happens, because sometimes it can be really challenging to find another time to meet with providers once they're off orientation or if it's outside of that designated education time.
Yeah. And I want to go back to where you talked about educating providers and the challenges associated with that. Like you said, you lose the body language if you don't have the camera and you lose that personal interaction, kind of having that screen in between you. So how were you able to determine which topics to target for education or even which providers or groups to target? When you were remote, were you still collecting data and that's how you determined it? Or was there another way that you figured out where the education need was?
Yeah, always important to utilize your data. Look to see what queries are being sent and to whom. If you aren't sending many queries for heart failure, it's probably not an area where you want to focus your education, right? if we only have 15 or 30 minutes for education, you want to choose the most applicable topics for a particular provider, the ones that are most often going to need to be clarified. When you're deciding which providers to target, you might want to look to see if there's an uptick in their query rates for a particular provider or a service line. That will usually tell you who needs the education. You can look at your CC and MCC capture rate, compare it to your peer groups. You can look at your ODE ratio. If your ratio is greater than one, that can indicate there's a need for education. If you're finding a lot of denials on a particular diagnosis, then that is a topic that you may want to target for your education. But really, all new providers should be receiving some education. CDI education is part of their onboarding process. They need to understand why they're getting queries and why they should care about it. They need to know how to answer the queries. They need to know what the escalation policy is. If there are significant changes that impact their documentation, like if there's new coding guidelines on a particular diagnosis that they document, they're going to need some more education on that update. If you're an organization that cares about rankings like U.S. News and World Report, you might choose to target education to the service lines that have a specific specialty ranking or ones you want to improve. If you notice your surgical CMI is dropping significantly, there might be a need to educate your surgical providers. Make sure that you're conducting audits so that you are ruling out potential missed opportunities from your CDI specialists. But often your data is going to tell you where the need for education is. Always leverage that data and your analytics. A lot of your software is going to provide you with that data that you need, particularly if you're a program that doesn't have a lot of time to designate for education. You want to know where your greatest needs are.
And it sounds like being remote or being hybrid doesn't necessarily make it more challenging to figure out what to educate on. It just provides those different barriers for how to provide that education. Does that sound right based on what you've said?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Just for the delivery, and you'll encounter different issues when you're working in a remote environment.
For sure. And again, focusing in on engaging with providers, educating providers, making that connection. Everyone knows that not every effort is going to be 100% successful. So did you ever try a strategy that just didn't quite work the way you wanted it to? And were you able to course correct, or was it just something where you're like, we really need to do something different?
Yeah, I've worked at some organizations that wanted to give provider education on everything in the kitchen sink, thinking that they're going to be able to absorb everything that we're teaching them. But you start to realize that they're going to tune things out over time. If you can visualize them, you'll notice that they're becoming less engaged, their eyes are darting all over, they're starting to check out. They're really only going to walk away with a few things. So we tried to focus on providing just-in-time education and prioritizing our teaching to what we needed them to know at that time, because we were really overloading them with information. We also found that for like new residents and fellows, we were more successful providing them with two short sessions rather than one long session at the beginning of their program.
Okay.
It allowed them some time to get used to documenting, getting used to writing, receiving queries. And after they've had some time to get used to their residency or their program, the organization, I feel like they were able to identify questions that they had. They were able to absorb the information more easily. But I always say, like, don't be afraid to ask your providers for feedback. That's how you improve, and that's how you develop the most effective strategies. So we always required all of our residents and fellows to give us feedback on the education, and we frequently evolved our practices based on the feedback that we got.
I love that idea of asking them what's working and what's not working. Like, go straight to the source. Don't guess. And I think that sometimes the simplest answer really is the correct one. Like, why stress yourself out trying to come up with something new that when what you're doing might already be working, or they might have suggestions for how to make it work. So I love that you did that.
Yeah, agreed.
So based on all of your experiences that you've had, both in person, in a remote environment, in a hybrid environment, what advice do you have for CDI professionals that are struggling to engage with providers or secure that buy-in for CDI efforts while working off-site?
Yeah, another great question. I think it's important that we try to customize all of our education to that particular provider or the group of providers. It needs to be applicable to them, and they need to understand why it impacts, how it impacts them, and why they should care, or you're unlikely to get buy-in. You want to make sure that you're discussing documentation that pertains to them. Like, a cardiologist needs to know how to properly document heart failure, MIs, and AFibs. Like, don't waste your time talking about things like brain compression and sepsis, because they're not likely to care about those issues. It also seems that providers are more receptive to information when it's coming from another provider. So if you can, try to get your physician advisors, your champions, your department leads to be involved if you're in your education whenever possible. I know that's not always feasible for some programs, but they do seem to tend to respond better when they're hearing it from another provider. If I'm doing one-to-one education and I have an opportunity to review that provider's documentation and give specific feedback on what they're documenting well and how they can improve, they love that. They don't want to receive queries. So if they can learn how to appropriately document and avoid getting a query, then they're more likely to be incentivized and follow your recommendations. Something else that I've found really helpful in keeping them engaged, especially with larger groups like residency programs, is using interactive polling platforms like Slido, Kahoot, Quizlet, Manometer. There's a lot of different programs out there, and many of them you can embed right into your slides. So you can, for example, have quizzes that are incorporated, and you can ask them to choose the best documentation on something, or you could quiz them on something that you just educated on to kind of reinforce particular topics. Many providers are really competitive, so if there's an option for them to compete against other providers, that will usually keep them engaged, especially if there's a ledger board where you can see who the winner is. If you're teaching a smaller group or like one-to-one, intermittently ask some questions about their practice. You can verbally quiz them to get an idea of current understanding. They tend to love case examples, especially if it pertains to their specialty. I try to make things as interactive as possible. I don't think that most people really want to sit and listen to somebody just talk at them for an extended period of time. So I think trying to make it as interactive as possible is kind of the secret.
Definitely. And I think it's so important that you touched both on emphasizing the why, because I feel like we talk about the why in CDI all the time. And so it shouldn't be any different when we're communicating to providers. Talk about why it matters to them, why it matters to their patients. So I think that's a really important point to hammer home. And I also think that focusing on what is going to keep people's attention is such an important consideration, because you're right. No one's going to sit in a room and want to be talked at for a half an hour. They want to be engaged. They want to be kept interested. And so finding those different tools that work to engage and to keep people interested and active in the conversation, I think makes successful education truly successful.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. So I want to thank you so much, Kelly, for being here. I really enjoyed our discussion. I feel like I got to learn a lot from your experience, and I hope our listeners do too. And as always, if our audience has any questions about this topic, you can feel free to email the ACTIS team at info@actis.org. But that is all for now with Kelly. So again, thank you so much, Kelly.
Thank you, Carla. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
And now it's time for the ACTIS Update, a regular segment featuring the latest news on what's going on inside the association. I want to start this ACTUS update with a couple of reminders and last calls, so to speak. So we're currently accepting applications to display a poster at the 2026 ACTUS conference, but the deadline is coming up. It's next Friday, December 12th. For those of you that aren't familiar with the conference posters, they are displayed at the conference and they detail an innovative project, a creative solution, or a new initiative at your organization. It's a way of sharing what's going on in your CDI backyard, so to speak. There's a dedicated poster viewing time during one of the breaks where we ask all of the poster creators to stand by their posters, answer questions from passersby, talk through their different methods and thought processes, and just really go over what they've done in detail. Some topics that past posters have covered include cerebral edema, physician engagement, collaboration, social determinants of health, risk adjustment, and remote work, just to name a few. Really, the sky is the limit. Tell us about whatever you are doing at your CDI organization, as long as there is no commercial bias. In other words, there can't be any particular promotion of a brand or a product. So those who attend the conference and are selected to display their poster will be able to earn CEUs by participating in that dedicated poster viewing time. And then one person per selected poster will also receive $200 off their ACTUS conference registration. So it's a great way to get involved with the ACTUS conference, to get a discount on your registration, and to really be proud of what's going on at your organization, what you and your team are doing. So please consider sharing that with the broader ACTUS community by submitting an application. Another way that you can get involved with the ACTUS conference is by nominating a peer or department for an ACTUS Achievement Award. So these nominations are also due by next Friday, December 12th. And it's a great way to recognize the efforts of a colleague or a CDI department that is just really excelling in achieving a diverse and equitable workplace. So we do offer these awards in four categories. We've got the CDI Professional of the Year Award, which goes to someone that has at least 10 years of experience in the profession. And it really is that sort of lifetime achievement award, someone that has contributed so much to the profession, to the industry, that deserves that recognition. Then we've got the Accomplishment in CDI Award, which recognizes someone with less experience in the industry, but who has made significant contributions during their time as a CDI professional. We have the Melissa Varnavis Spirit of Service Award that recognizes someone who's willing to serve the CDI community, whether that's through volunteering on ACTUS boards and committees for their local chapter, to mentor people in their department, however they're giving back to their CDI community. And then lastly, we have the Diversity in CDI Award, which recognizes a CDI department that is really just going above and beyond in making CDI an inclusive place to be. The recipients are recognized in a special ceremony at the conference, and it really is just one of the highlights of the conference to get these amazing people together and have a chance to recognize them as a community. So please do think about nominating someone and submit that nomination using the link in today's show notes by December 12th. And then lastly, I just wanted to extend one final invitation to join us for the ACTUS and Just Coding virtual seminar, which will be taking place next Wednesday, December 10th from 12 p.m. to 3:20 p.m. Eastern. This is the very first time we're hosting this virtual event, and we're really pleased to do it with our friends at Just Coding, who are owned by the same parent company as us, HC Pro. And it's going to take a deep dive into both clinical documentation requirements and coding requirements and the nuances of both for specific clinical conditions. So it's perfect whether you're coming from a CDI or a coding background, because we're going to explore both. Our speakers will look at encephalopathy, acute respiratory failure, acute kidney injury, and sepsis in depth. You'll also have the opportunity to earn 3 CEUs. We're offering CEUs from ACTIS, AHIMA, ANCC, and AAPC. So I definitely encourage you to use the link in today's show notes to learn more about this virtual event and consider joining us. It's a great opportunity to brush up on some coding and CDI nuances for these conditions, as well as a chance to earn CEUs in an easy virtual format. So as always, for everything, you can find the link for more information in today's show notes. As I mentioned at the top of our show today, each ACTIS podcast episode offers 0.5 ACTIS CEU, which can be used towards recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential if you listen to the show in the first 4 days from the time it posts. To receive your 0.5 CEU, go to the show page on ACTIS.org by clicking on the ACTIS podcast link under the free resources tab. Then select today's episode from the listing on that page. Scroll down to the recording of the episode and press play. At the end of the video, when the timer hits zero, a link to the CEU evaluation will appear. Click on that, take the survey, and your certificate will be automatically emailed to you upon submission. Those instructions are also laid out on the show page if you'd like to follow along there. To ensure that your certificate reaches you and does not get trapped in your organization's spam filters, we do suggest that you use a personal email address when completing the CEU evaluation form. The cutoff for today's episode is Sunday, December 7th at 11 p.m. Eastern. After that point, the CEU period will close and you will not be eligible for the 0.5 CEU for this week's episode. With that, we've reached the end of today's ACTIS podcast episode, but we'll be back in 2 weeks on Wednesday, December 17th with a new episode hosted by ACTIS Director Rebecca Hendren. If you'd like to receive reminders about each episode, make sure you're subscribed to our free weekly e-newsletter, CDI Strategies, which always includes a link to the new episode when it's available. You can listen to the show at any time on the ACTIS website or via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. All the links we discussed during today's episode will also be available in the show notes. And as always, we would really appreciate it if you'd take a minute to leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app, as it really helps others find our show. Our intro and outro music is Media Noche by D.N. Key, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jazar, both obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have any suggestions for future guests or topics, do email us at info@actis.org. And until next time, take care, everyone.